It's Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. At the end of every month, Current State takes a few minutes to review what's worth reviewing in state government and politics. Today is the last day of August. We look back at a rather turbulent month with two guests. John Lindstrom keeps a close eye on the Capitol as publisher at Gongwer News in Lansing. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Mark.
And Paul Egan does the same for the Detroit Free Press. Welcome back, Paul.
Good morning, Mark.
The Corsair Gamrat saga has dominated the news out of the Capitol for weeks now, and today we anticipate the release of the House Business Office report ordered by Republican Speaker Kevin Cotter. John, what are we likely to learn from this report?
I guess we'll find out when the report comes out. Last week, when the report was handed over by Tim Boland, who runs the House Business Office, to the Speaker and then to Dickinson Wright, the outside law firm to review things, it was said that there was obvious evidence of misuse of taxpayer funds and misuse of their office. And so we anticipate that this is going to be a very serious set of documents that's going to be revealed. The Speaker has keeps saying he will appoint, or likely will appoint, a special committee to investigate this further. And I would expect that once the report is released, we will then see some action on creating that special committee.
Any particular thoughts on as to what you're anticipating, Paul?
Well, I think, as they've already said, there is going to be a finding that they've misused House resources. I think a large number of lawmakers from both parties would still like to see both of these lawmakers resign. I don't think they particularly want to go through an expulsion process, or a process that may lead to expulsion. And I think the other possibility is we could see, if there is something that could trigger a criminal investigation, that could certainly put more pressure on for resignations.
The report was compiled by House Business Officer Tim Boland and then went to Speaker Cotter, as you mentioned, John. But then it got turned over to attorneys with Dickinson Wright. Is it clear what Dickinson Wright's role is in this?
Well, apparently, as part of the investigation, from what we understand, the House Business Office compiled essentially every email that went in and out of the offices of Representative Corsair and Gamrat. Most of these would have been emails, at least a good share of these would have been emails involving constituents, dealing with the kinds of things that constituents always have questions on licensing matters, or on things dealing with schools and such like that. And so, from what we have been told, and we haven't been told anything differently, at least on our side, that they were going through and, in effect, excising names and email addresses and that sort of thing of the constituents. Of course, the longer this thing has gone on, I mean, when this report was first issued and first sent over to Dickinson Wright, there was an indication that it might be released as early as last Wednesday. It keeps getting later and later and later. The Democratic side are saying, is there a cover-up underway? The longer this thing goes on, the more difficult it looks possibly for Republicans and until this thing is actually released and people get to see what's in the report.
Well, Brandon Dillon, the state Democratic leader, has said that any summary that's released to the public will not include all of the documents, and he went on to call that Nixonian. Is he right?
Well, I think there's been a little bit of hyperbole on that. I think once we see the report, we'll be in a better position to see whether it's been quote unquote sanitized, as Dillon has put it. So they've just been very adamant that the report should be released immediately, and the Republicans' position is the report isn't finished yet.
Hmm. We're hearing that House Speaker Kevin Cotter will use what's in the report to determine whether to form a committee to continue its investigation. You alluded to this earlier, John. Do we know about this committee and its charge? What is apt to come of this committee?
Well, we really know very little at this point. There's the resolution that was adopted. It doesn't go into a lot of specifics on what powers the committee could have. It could obviously always be added to. Another resolution could be passed if needed. We have no idea who the membership will be. Obviously, it'll be a majority Republican. We know that. but it's been very much kept as a nebulous situation at the moment, outside of the Speaker's office saying that the Speaker will probably appoint this committee. It's still even not definite that the committee will be appointed.
John Lindstrom of Gongwer News, Paul Egan of the Detroit Free Press joined me for current states. A month in review for the month of August. The legislature spent several unproductive days in session the week before last trying to move forward on road and bridge funding. Paul, no deal was struck. Can you give us a post-mortem?
Well, it's not looking very, very good right now because a narrative had developed that you know, that there was going to be a compromise between the House and Senate plans, and they're trying to raise $1.2 billion a year at least to spend on roads. And the idea that we were hearing as a compromise was, well, let's take half of that in new money, taxes or higher fuel taxes or registration fees, and the other from savings or money generated from economic growth. But what we found out when the deal fell apart was that, you know, not only the Democrats were concerned about that $600 million figure coming from the general fund, but also Governor Rick Snyder. And you have the sense on the other side that getting more than $600 million in new taxes is going to be a very heavy lift for the House Republicans.
Where are the original plans right now, John? I mean, the House plan, the Senate plan go back a ways now. Are they still on the table, or is it inevitable that they're going to be altered?
Well, technically, they're still on the table, yes, but you have to expect that you're going to see some sort of a compromise, and clearly the governor would prefer to see a compromise go more in the way of what the Senate did, which called for a higher gas tax increase and essentially most of the $1.2 billion coming out of revenue increases. They tried to offset that a little bit with an income tax cut that would take effect over time. On the House side, as Paul and as you alluded to, it's going to be a little more tricky to get folks who have, many of whom signed pledges that they would not raise taxes, to come up with a tax increase, and that might force the Speaker to try to reach a compromise with the Democrats. And now we're hearing that some Republicans are saying, well, forget that, then we're only going to go 400 and 400. We're not going to go 600 and 600. Mm-hmm. So it's very much in flux and basically a mess.
Speaking you alluded to criticism of the House plan, which tries to use existing revenue. Just Friday, House Minority Leader Tim Grimmel, the Democrat, was on this program and was outspoken in his criticism of that plan. Let's listen back to that.
That leads to very serious questions about whether this is a sustainable investment of general fund dollars, but it also leads to questions about where are they going to cut? Are they going to cut from Medicaid? Are they going to cut revenue sharing to local communities that could impact public safety? Are they going to cut from education for our universities or community colleges? And they have refused to disclose where this $600 million is going to come from in the general fund.
Would House Republicans maintain, Paul, that it would come from growth? John alluded to economic growth here. Is that part of their thinking?
It's a large part of their thinking. They're certainly looking at other cuts. They wanted to eliminate the earned income tax credit. They wanted to make some cuts to the MEDC. But the fact is that despite several consecutive years of economic growth, that the budget's really not in very good shape right now.
Earlier this month, President Obama unveiled his Clean Power Plan, the very first nationwide regulations for carbon dioxide emissions from U.S. power plants. Remind our listeners what was in this plan, John.
Well, basically, this is a very dramatic decrease in carbon emissions, mostly from coal-fired plants, that would be expected by 2030, if I remember correctly. And it, of course, has drawn a lot of controversy from a number of different areas, especially coal-producing states, on the effect it would have on the coal industry. But carbon dioxide emissions are one of the key elements in climate change and the concerns about climate change, and are one of those areas where the president, environmentalists, and even a lot of people in the industry see that there are great chances of reducing those, especially since we've seen massive increases in production of natural gas, and so that we can switch a lot of our electric generation from coal to other sources. And there's been some reports that show that many states, including Michigan, are already very far on the way towards reaching the goals that the EPA plan would enact.
What did you make of the response to the Clean Power Plan, Paul?
It was pretty much somewhat predictable. I mean, certainly Republicans in Congress in Michigan were very critical of the plan, critical of President Obama. Attorney General Bill Schuette is also very critical of the plan. What was interesting is, you know, the utilities that are in some ways the most directly affected were, their response was a much more tempered. They are in the process of closing a number of these coal-fired plants really in the next year and spending significant money to upgrade the ones that are staying open.
States do have options, by the way, and individual states have options in terms of how they reach compliance, and it'll include reduction targets along the way to 2030. You're correct about the 2030 year, John. Valerie Brader, who is executive director of the Michigan Agency for Energy, expressed confidence that the state can reach compliance. But as you referred to, Paul, AG Bill Schuette said he might join a lawsuit to fight the ruling. Here's how a spokeswoman for the AG's office summarized that.
The Attorney General is deeply concerned by yet another executive action taken by President Obama and the EPA that violates the Clean Air Act and causes the price of electricity to increase, placing jobs at risk and costing Michigan families even more.
John, last word on this topic.
Well, it's an ongoing issue, and it's in no accident, perhaps, that we're talking the same day that the president's going to be going to Alaska to talk about climate change as it affects the Arctic. This is going to be a matter of debate for quite some time. But as Paul correctly pointed out, the utility companies themselves are taking steps to minimize their own use of coal. And so in some respects, this is one of those situations where policymakers argue and the market itself may be leading the end decision on the issue.
John Lindstrom of Gongwer News, Paul Egan of the Detroit Free Press here on Current State's Month in Review for the month of August. Presidential candidates are visiting the state periodically. We're in line for more of them here in September. Governor John Kasich is scheduled to be in East Lansing tomorrow. Paul, what are you hearing as Michigan mulls over this long list of candidates?
Well, it's not yet Labor Day, although we are getting very close. And the sense I get is that the general public really hasn't focused on this very much yet. You've got Donald Trump leading in Michigan like in the rest of the country, and it'll be interesting to see whether and how much longer that continues as people really begin to focus on this presidential race.
John, what are you hearing, either on the Republican or the Democratic side? We're up to, what, seven candidates now amongst the Democrats? I'm not mistaken,
knows,
at least six.
You know, what day is it? Maybe we'll find out tomorrow. Probably the most interesting thing in regards to presidential candidates here in Michigan, Senator Rubio made his first appearance, but of course the Donald made his first appearance up at Birch Run earlier this month, and it was quite a party. Literally, since it was the first Republican gathering that anyone could remember, they were selling Bud Tallboys, and they were being purchased in great quantity. obviously, right now, in terms of the Republicans, Donald Trump seems to be taking all the oxygen out of the room. There's a lot of unknowns as to what effect he'll have. One of the questions that still keeps getting asked is the folks that appear to be his typical supporters are often the folks that don't show up to the polls. So we don't know whether they would or not. Michigan is getting a lot of attention from the Republicans, especially because of its position as an early primary state after the first three states, Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. So that's going to be a real shakeout kind of a position. As you said, Governor Kasich is showing up tomorrow. There'll be six.
Not for the first time.
No, he's been several times. He's come to Michigan quite often, actually. We've covered a couple of his couple of his different events, and he's come to Lansing quite a bit. And he's got a fair amount of support here in Lansing. Obviously, his own experience in Ohio reflects on that. Governor Snyder has not yet endorsed a candidate. And some people are wondering if at some point he would turn around and endorse either Governor Kasich or Governor Bush. Governor Bush was endorsed by Attorney General Schuette. So things are definitely on the Republican side getting far more interesting. On the Democratic side, it's pretty much been can anyone really eclipse Hillary Clinton at this point? And all the speculation about Vice President Biden, how successful Senator Sanders is.
Bernie Sanders is making gains in polling numbers, though,
isn't
he? New Hampshire
in
particular.
That. Yeah, he's definitely doing that.
Let's revisit here a bit of Donald Trump's visit to Birch Run here earlier this month. Here he is.
So Ford is building a $2.5 billion plant, right, in Mexico. They're building it in Mexico. So you say, now, how is that good for us? So I said to myself, right, no good. It's so big, they'll make the parts, the trucks. And I actually gave them a good idea. Why don't we just let the illegals drive the cars and trucks right in through the border? They don't have to even, it's true. No, I gave them that. Save a lot of money.
How is Michigan's GOP establishment responding to Donald Trump? Has Governor Snyder said anything about Donald Trump? Has any of the establishment said much about Donald Trump?
Governor Snyder doesn't tend to throw a lot of bombs, but in his own way, he's been critical of Donald Trump, said that he's made a number of inappropriate comments and that voters should take that into consideration. What I noticed is other establishment Republicans in Michigan were publicly very critical of Donald Trump early on. The John McCain comment where he criticized prisoners of war, saying, "I like people that don't get captured." I saw a number of prominent Republicans very critical of that. They seem to have grown a little more quiet in the last week or two. I think perhaps wondering if the publicity is just generating even more support, and people seem to be growing a little more quiet just to see how this phenomenon is going to continue.
The other interesting thing, I think, looking at the front runners, looking at Trump and looking at Hillary Clinton, they're both pretty high in the unfavorables.
Well, they are. Well. And at least one, to go back to Donald Trump, at least one high-ranking but also very controversial Republican figure in this state, Dave Agema, who is the Republican national chairperson, has said repeatedly on social media that he is backing Donald Trump. Mm. And Paul is absolutely right. All of a sudden, the establishment has gotten a little more quiet about Mr. Trump, in part, I suppose, because he continues to lead the polls. And there is some, although at this moment, frankly, polls are probably worthless, but there is some concern and about, well, what happens if he's the nominee? I mean, what do we do under those circumstances?
Indeed.
And so, maybe we need to walk back some of the comments, at least at this point. We'll see what starts to happen as we get further down the line and as some of the other candidates maybe drop out, and we'll see where the support goes. In terms of the negatives, looking at Secretary Clinton, the big issue for her, of course, is the email controversy. I don't think most people could tell you what the email controversy really means, even those who are reciting it. But that is in her case leading the issue and allowing for Senator Sanders to make his case, make his point about what he thinks needs to be done, and is in part one of the reasons why so many people are now hoping the vice president jumps in the race.
What are Michigan Democrats saying about Bernie Sanders?
About Bernie Sanders, I think most, at least the establishment Democrats, have not really embraced a Bernie Sanders candidacy that I've heard so far. I mean, I think what you are hearing a little more conversation is about the possibility of a Joe Biden getting into the race.
Hmm. We will review here for just for some context here, the Epic MRA poll results from last week. It found that assuming Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, that Michigan voters give Hillary a 3 percentage point advantage over Donald Trump, 45% to 42%. But Hillary loses to Jeb Bush head-to-head, 45% to 40%. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I think that just shows who do you like least, especially between Clinton and Trump. If it was Governor Bush or possibly one of the other Republican candidates, such as Governor Kasich or maybe Senator Rubio, she might not do any better at this moment. Of course, Governor Kasich still lacks in name ID compared to the other candidates.
But it does show the toll that this email scandal is taking on Hillary Clinton, because a June Epic MRA poll had her beating Jeb Bush in Michigan, I believe it was 40-37, mm-hmm. So that's reversed itself.
Paul, you wrote recently about September's Republican Leadership Conference at Mackinac Island, which will be attracting some of these same presidential candidates. Who's coming? What's happening?
Well, there will be six presidential candidates that we know of so far. It's probably unlikely that number is going to grow now. So we have Kasich, Cruz, Walker, Rand Paul.
Bush is coming.
Jeb Bush.
Jeb Bush. Okay.
And I'm missing one other. Who are we missing?
Is Cruz coming? I can't recall.
Carly Fiorina.
Oh, Fiorina. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is happening later next month. We are just about out of time here, though, but we want to thank both of our guests here. Paul Egan covers the Capitol, of course, for the Detroit Free Press. John Lindstrom is publisher at Gongwer News in Lansing. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.